WrestleSpective Radio is not affiliated with World Wrestling Entertainment, TNA Wrestling, Ring of Honor Wrestling, or any other sports entertainment entity or personality.
You're listening to WrestleSpective Radio. Learn to love it.
Welcome to WrestleSpective. I am Jason Mann, and joining me today is Sergio Hernandez of MMA Mania and Cage Side Seats, a site that I was also written for. Also does the Wrestling Aficionado podcast and many other things. Sergio, how are you doing today?
I am well. How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good, good, good. Thanks for having me again.
You're very welcome. Second time on the show, and we're going to totally double up the first time. We had a great show the first time, but we're going to totally beat those expectations and just have another great show.
This is going to be like the Godfather 2 to our pre-2001 Godfather.
Yes, that is exactly an appropriate and not at all exaggerated analogy. So you picked this match, an interesting choice. It is Abyss taking on Christian at Sacrifice 2006, TNA, obviously. Christian is the NWA champion. He just won it a few months previous from Jeff Jarrett after defecting from WWE to TNA, really becoming the first major free agent to actually make that choice, and it kind of had mixed results for him, which we can talk about later. But it was kind of one of the big times of his career as far as coming over, being an instant main eventer in TNA. Obviously TNA a smaller fish even than the WWE, but still was definitely a risk for him, and it yielded some interesting results.
Oh yeah, for sure. Like, I forgot how quickly he actually got the title. He debuted, what was it, November? Like, it was late 2005.
Right.
And then got the title very early in 2006.
Yeah, so, yeah, it was November 13th, I believe, at Genesis. Which was that the first monthly pay-per-view or first monthly pay-per-view, if I recall correctly, that was like around then anyway, because they had the times where they were doing the weekly ones and they kind of weren't doing any for a while and had that weird, Fox TV show and then, moved to Spike and did the monthly pay-per-view. So they were kind of on the cusp. And I think creatively, a lot of people look at this period kind of the, 2005 into 2006 as being their best as far as, the talent that they had, how they were presenting guys. They had the X Division was hot, particularly with Samoa Joe and AJ Styles and Christopher Daniels, and they really seemed to be onto something as far as, producing consistently better pay-per-views up and down than WWE was. And that kind of ended when they brought back Vince Russo and went kind of in a completely different direction.
Yeah, no, for sure. That's part of the reason why I picked this match is because I was actually there live. I flew that's how much I was really into TNA. I flew from Texas to Orlando just to watch TNA. And, this happened to be the pay-per-view that they were running at the time. And, but yeah, man, 2005, 2006 TNA was incredible. And I guess they weren't getting the growth that they wanted. So they kind of put the kibosh on everything that made them great and started, in another direction.
Yeah, and in a direction that I was watching them a little, here and there. I mean, not that consistently, but I was certainly following what they were doing, and I certainly, liked a lot of it. TNA has never been something I've, really regularly been super into and followed for whatever reason. And honestly, WWE has been up and down for me in the past 10 years or so. You could tell that they might have been on they certainly had their issues even in these times, just kind of with pacing and consistency and developing some of their characters, but they certainly were on to interesting things, and they certainly were at this point a true alternative to WWE. They were doing different things than WWE was doing, you know. And I think that was kind of a key for them to kind of create their own identity, and they kind of went away from that. And I'm not saying everything they did after 2006 was bad, but I do think that they went in a more WWE-like direction to a certain extent.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you go from main eventing pay-per-views with Joe Styles, Christopher Daniels, three-way to, Sting versus, Bobby Roode.
Sure.
Which Bobby Roode is great in TNA now, but I don't know. Like, again, they're still trying to, I
Re
guess,
recapture the 90s, it seems
yeah,
like.
they're still trying to get over that hump that they've been trying to get over for like the past half decade.
Yeah.
And now they're using stars from the 90s to help them do that.
Sure. And that's, and there's
80s Hogan as well.
Right, yeah, well, yeah, obviously, the big thing over the last 2, 3 years has been, bringing Hogan and Bischoff in that whole direction, which moved even further in that direction from, the kind of 2007 to 2010 run, where, it was more, Cornette was a heavy part of that, and Russo, obviously, and Dutch Mantel, and, so, yeah, TNA's definitely had a lot of, small eras where they kind of completely tried different things. I guess the one nice thing about TNA even now is that they're not afraid to experiment in ways that WWE doesn't like to do.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, this whole reality TV, like wrestling TV show that Impact has become is it's a perfect testament to that.
Right, yeah. So what, whether you like it or not, it's at least something that they're trying new things, and I can appreciate that. And one thing that almost plays into that a little bit here in the build to this match is, and speaking kind of the reality TV and the whole TMZ thing, is Alex Shelley's gimmick at the time was that he was paparazzi, where he would go and, follow all the other wrestlers with the camera, and you would get kind of like, different sorts of portrayals. They weren't exactly out of character, but they weren't acting like in a exaggerated wrestler persona. They were acting more naturalistic, more, just more like a regular person in a certain way, and I think that really worked for Shelley, and that kind of was a compelling presentation, and it really, I thought it was pretty effective here because it's Alex Shelley and James Sinister Minister Mitchell,
Oh, James Mitchell. I
yeah,
love that guy.
he's great. He's great. I'm not a big fan of Abyss necessarily. But I thought he was really good, and they show him and the two of them stalking Christian's wife. They peer through the windows in her home, and they cut to, it's not just like continuous footage. They cut to, brief snippets, like, 5 or 6 seconds of her like in the kitchen of the home, her in the bedroom. They're wondering if she's gonna, take her clothes off. With Mitchell in particular being really creepy about it, and then them following her to a tanning salon, and then finally confronting her, and and him, obviously threatening Christian and wondering why Christian was leaving her unprotected, and so on and so forth. So pretty good stuff there.
I thought the whole thing was really oogie, man.
Yeah, right. I mean,
I
it
guess
was.
like was it that's a desired effect, I guess.
Right, yeah, I mean, it was really, yeah, I thought it was genuinely creepy and genuinely effective at making me like really want to see Christian get these guys. That was really well done.
When Mitchell at the tanning salon, when he smells Christian's wife's hair, I was just like, oh, that's so
Exactly.
gross.
Yeah. Now I will say that during while Christian is being introduced during the match, Mike Tenay says that Christian must have a mental checklist that goes back to the stalking, back to the drowning, and back to the hanging.
Yeah.
Now, that is a lot of things to cram into even a 2 month, this I think was the end of the 2nd month of the feud. That is just sort of like, I think that really, really overkill as far as things that you, it's like none of them are effective because you're doing so much to try to make people, just too much like over the top unrealistic things.
Yeah, I guess so. I although I did like the the drowning segment where they go back to Christian's house and Christian actually confronts Shelley, and it's part of that whole like not acting like a, you know, like a wrestling character. It's more like, you know, Christian walks out and he's like, "What, you know, what are you doing filming my house? Like, what's going on?"
Right. Yeah.
And Mitchell and Abyss seemingly come out of nowhere. Like, Christian doesn't see them.
Right.
Even though it's, you know, the middle of the day, and then, you know, they fight through the house, and he nearly drowns him in his own pool. Great looking house, by the way.
Yeah.
Christian really has an eye for design.
Maybe his wife's very talented, you know. Maybe his wife, or, you know, maybe both of them. You know, let's not be sexist here. Let's give them both credit.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But then the hanging, of course, that took place at the end of their match at Lockdown, where Christian beats Abyss. But Abyss, after the match, hangs him, you know, wraps a steel chain around his neck, and then hangs him from the cage.
Yeah. I think all the individual things were good that they did, but doing all three in the course of a 2-month feud just seems like, wow, that's a lot, you know? Like, it feels like you can milk one more effectively than doing all three, or at least doing two of the three, you know? I guess the stalking is more of an implicit threat thing, where the drowning and hanging are both obviously heavy violence, you know, and types of things. And I think too much of that, you really lose, like, the impact of it, you know?
Yeah, true. I guess,
for lack of a better term.
As much as I enjoyed the pool segment, I mean, I think Christian would have riled himself up enough just by the fact that they were stalking his wife.
Yes, right.
I mean, that would have riled me up.
It would. I would not be happy.
Any red-blooded American male.
Right. I would probably call the authorities.
Yeah, like, this goes far beyond wrestling, man. What's going on?
Yes, right. Because I am not a person who fights people for things, you know. I'm not a professional wrestler. You know?
You're a lover, not a fighter.
I am very much so, yes. Anything else you can think of as far as the build goes?
Not much. I mean, it's just you know, those three big big incidents, and then because of the use of the chain, I guess they introduced the full Metal Mayhem stipulation to the match, which essentially is just it's a TLC match but with chains.
Right. And was this the first one of those, or had they done those before?
I think they had done one before.
Okay.
I'm not exactly sure, but yeah, they played up, you know, Christian's history and, you know, in the WWE, not implicitly, like, they just kind of like his experience with these kinds of matches.
Sure.
Was played up,
which I think is a good use of that. I mean, I think you can overdo talking about the competition, but you know, that's something that every fan watching that knows he was in WWE and would at least have some idea of the TLC matches, or at least 95% of them anyway. So I feel like bringing that kind of thing in is good.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And then kind of the whole aspect of, you know, Abyss wanting to beat him at his own game, more or less.
Yeah. I didn't realize, I guess I'd forgotten that Abyss had actually been around since 03 in TNA. He really had, I was thinking he had been introduced a little bit later, but he's sort of an interesting character in TNA history. We can maybe get into a little bit more of it at the end of the podcast, but you know, I've never really been a huge fan of his as a performer or as a character that much. I mean, just, it sort of seems like a very much like an obvious cross between Mankind and Kane. And it feels a little bit more like, not exactly parody, but like just sort of, I don't know. I've never been that convinced by the performance, and I feel like he's done a lot of like bumping and blood stuff for the sake of it, rather than for effective storytelling. And I actually kind of have that, feel that way a little bit in this match, which we'll definitely get into.
No, yeah, for sure. I've never been a huge Abyss fan up until recently, when he started playing his own brother, Joseph Park Esquire. Right.
Yeah, oh, that's been fantastic. I've seen bits and pieces, but I've seen him. I follow him on Twitter, but yeah, that's been awesome.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, like just the whole, like, it's, he has really just created an entirely new persona with no like remnants or pieces of the Abyss character at all.
Right.
Which is awesome. But yeah, like you said, you know, it's kind of like they took the worst elements of Mankind and Kane and like upped the goofiness.
Yeah.
And that's Abyss.
Right. Yeah. So I'll get into a few more examples as we talk about the match. But so we have Don West and Mike Tenay as our commentary team. And Earl Hebner's a referee. I liked the intro where mine didn't show Abyss's intro, but we have like we show Christian walking backstage as you can hear his music and kind of, you know, getting ready, then coming out through the curtain. And I always enjoy when they do something a little different with the intro, with the entrance. And he's got his Captain Charisma jacket on, and I thought that was a little neat touch. I like it when WWE does those once in a while too, where it's just nice to kind of shoot it from a different perspective.
Yeah, well, it's kind of, it's not exposing the business, but it's kind of like pulling back the curtain just a little bit.
Right.
So it adds like a more of a sense of realism to the match, which I mean, this, you know, with the everything that had happened with his wife and with the pool and all that, this match definitely benefited from.
Yes, I agree. So, and Jerry and Borash does the introductions, which Borash is a great ring announcer. I will, and he's really pretty good at commentary too. But I've grown to appreciate him as a ring announcer over the years.
No Bruce Buffer or no Michael Buffer, but
he's not. No, I mean he's obviously not gonna, you know, and certainly he's not gonna command 9 figures for each appearance. But yeah, he's good. There's no question
good guy,
about
yeah.
it.
Good guy.
And this is still the NWA title. We're still about a year away from that becoming the TNA title and no longer having the affiliation with the NWA. And we get a pretty quick start. Christian with a flurry of punches and chops. Abyss tries a power slam and Christian tosses him in a corner. And they each very quickly try their finishers. Christian tries, it's called the Unprettier here, which seems like they were really needed to give it a different name at this point, because Unprettier was like a 10-year-old song almost. But
yeah, I always thought that was like the weirdest name for a move.
Yeah, and
that might have worked for like someone like, you know, Rick Martel during the model run.
Yes, that exactly. Yeah, it never really fit the character either for Christian. Yeah. I mean, he never did that, you know, not when he was a vampire, and he was never really, you know, glam or pretty. I mean, he and Edge were, you know, silly, but it wasn't quite the same thing.
Yeah.
And Abyss with the black hole slam, they both are able to avoid that. And then Christian gets a spear and does a few punches on the mat, a little ground and pound. And then Abyss takes control with a series of knee lifts and then hits the avalanche. And then Abyss slowly goes out, or kind of slowly goes outside, goes after the ladder, and then Christian baseball slides into him. And then immediately I kind of get bothered because, like, when Christian goes to the outside, Abyss basically punches him and takes control 15 seconds later. It's like he doesn't – that is not sold at all.
Yeah, no, like that happens a couple times in the match where, like, I'm watching it and I would – like, my attention would go to something else for maybe 5 seconds. And I'd go back to the match and Abyss is once again in control. I'm like, how did this happen? So I have to, like, rewind the match and figure out – and he usually just does – he just punches him a couple times and takes control.
Yeah, exactly. It's like they're doing these spots, but they don't really lead anywhere. It's just basically Abyss takes a big bump, and then, you know, 30 seconds to a minute later, he's back in control. And it's just like it's just sort of doing it for the bump's sake rather than for, you know, anything more. And that happens a little bit with Christian, too. I'm not mean just rag on Abyss because Christian has a couple of bumps where, you know, they're forgotten about, you know, a couple minutes later. But that's, like, I guess, maybe a problem with a lot of ladder matches, which is why ladder matches isn't necessarily my favorite type of match. I mean, there are very great ladder matches that I very much enjoy, but it just sort of – you lose a lot of the, the effectiveness of bumping and selling is kind of lost in ladder matches because you have so much brutal stuff going on. I think the multi-man ones work a little bit better for me because you have so many guys involved that they can take a bump and then sit out for a couple of minutes and then get back into it, and you have that real, you know, at least a little more realistic that they've, you know, had that amount of pain and that they're back after, you know, recovering.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, with the one-on-one, they have to essentially recover pretty almost instantaneously just to keep the action moving along.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I understand that it's a difficult problem to solve, you know, in practical terms, why you're putting a match together. But yeah, it just really stands out for me for whatever reason in this match. So we have a little bit later, we have Christian. The ladder is sort of set along in between the ropes and at an angle, and then Christian goes from the apron to the floor, catapulting the ladder into Abyss's face.
Yeah.
And then he runs and clotheslines Abyss to the other side of the floor over the ropes. And then now we kind of – this is a little bit weird too. They sort of lollygag around to the other side of the ring. You just kind of hold each other and walk. Maybe a couple of shots there.
They brawl walk, which is a term I invented like a month ago during a match.
Yes, brawl walk. That's very – but they don't really even brawl. I mean they grab walk, you know.
Exactly. Like they throw like maybe one or two punches apiece.
Yeah. And then they go over the barricade. Abyss gets a couple of punches, and then Christian slams his head into a wall, and they go back to ringside, and that's basically. And then Abyss is in control again. You know, it's like, okay.
I have that. Like it's, and sends him back towards the ring. Abyss somehow gets back in control.
Right. Yeah.
And I don't get why they would brawl. Like it wasn't even like through the audience. It was just like through like, you know, one little portion, and then right back. It just seemed kind of pointless.
Yeah, it was really random. I get the idea of doing a crowd spot and getting excited, but there was no, yeah, I mean, it was just like literally as perfunctory of one as you could possibly do.
Exactly.
So Abyss props up a ladder onto the turnbuckle, slams Christian back first into it. He goes to the corner. He takes a second to pose, and then predictably Christian moves away on the charge, and Abyss hits the ladder face first pretty hard. So this is another dumb move by Abyss to take that time to pose and to delay and to, you know, clearly let that happen. Then Christian also does something dumb when he puts the ladder in front of Abyss and then decides to charge into the ladder with Abyss there, which obviously would hurt him just as much as Abyss. And then Abyss right, and then Abyss tosses the ladder into Christian, thus, you know, making it even worse. And then Mitchell tosses it in a chair, and they prop it into the corner. And we sort of have this was kind of cool, like a series of reversals of trying to send each other into the chair. And then eventually Christian ends it by kicking Abyss into kicking him into a low blow, getting him in the nuts. And then he tosses Abyss's head into the chair in the corner.
Yeah, that's probably my favorite sequence of the match, where they're reversing and countering, and Christian gets whipped into the opposite turnbuckle and like floats over Abyss as he crashes in. And then when Abyss gets sent into the corner with the chair, he kind of tries to do the same thing for some reason. Like, I've never like thought of Abyss as anything like as anyone who really leaves his feet all that often.
Right.
But he tries the same thing. And when he lands, that's when Christian lands a low blow, which I enjoyed.
Yes. Yeah, that was well done. They did a couple of other kind of random reversal wrestling type sequences that just sort of seemed odd for this match. And just sort of seemed again like, okay, we're going to get a couple of wrestling sequences in here just because we feel like we need to fit them into the match, as opposed to it being like anything that went anywhere. There was a lot of things that didn't really seem to go anywhere here.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. But this one I thought was effective. I mean, this one had more of a point, I guess, more than anything. So, We have Christian climbing up the ladder for the first time, but Abyss pushes him down, then lands a pretty good big boot right afterward. Then Abyss tries to toss Christian into a ladder that's sort of slanted against the turnbuckle. Christian tries to get a German suplex on Abyss into the ladder, which would have been interesting to see. And then Abyss sends him in there with a he sort of sends him away. Then Christian comes running back into him, and he gives him a belly to belly into the ladder, which was really good back bump. And then Christian like writhes really exaggeratedly in pain, a good exaggeratedly, where he's just really like, wow, that one was a really big one, and that one really hurt. In Abyss, whenever he took the big bumps, I didn't get that sense that he was feeling any pain. And granted, he's kind of the monster, but still, like, he's taking the vicious thing, so it's kind of weird. I don't know.
No, yeah, I really enjoyed how he for lack of a better term, how he sold getting suplexed onto the ladder. But yeah, because he like immediately like he almost like falls down, and he almost catches like Abyss's feet as he falls down.
Yeah.
So which is a little thing I know, because I mean like I don't know, like it hurt so bad that he didn't even like worry to avoid like, kind of like landing on his opponent's feet. Like he just his instinct was just to drop down and writhe around in pain.
Yeah, and that was really an effective way to to I'm sure that bump was already painful, but to emphasize to the crowd how painful that was to feel. So we get
I
a
don't know, which is weird. Like I guess which as much wrestling as I've watched over my life, I get excited over how someone falls down.
Well, yeah, I mean, there are so many things that you see over and over again done the same way. When you see something done a little bit differently, it stands out.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah. So Abyss pulls two tables at ringside next to each other with Mitchell's help. Then he slides a third table out as well. This is again like. Why, what is the purpose of setting up these tables? Why are we taking forever to do this, other than like allowing Christian to slowly get to his feet and to get back here? I mean, I guess, yeah, okay, he's doing this to get him to put him through this table, but it's like your guy just took like a really painful thing. Like, go after him and attack him, and that will probably work out better for you.
Yeah, exactly. Like he's as vulnerable as he has been in the entire match. Like maybe, I don't know, maybe he hit a black hole slam. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe that'll work. Maybe he could. And I hate to overthink this too much. And I hate people complain about that, because I feel like thinking about logic in wrestling is good. Like I feel like thinking about, and in storytelling and in all these things, like we demand that for almost everything else. We should demand that in a wrestling, at least to a certain extent. But without maybe going to absurd lengths about it. But I just feel like this really just stands out here.
Yeah, well, I guess you could chalk it up to Abyss and Mitchell just wanting to punish and brutalize Christian
Yeah, I
for
mean
the title.
that makes some sense, I guess. But then again, like you have a chair like that you brought into the ring like 2 minutes ago. Maybe hit him with the chair a bunch of times.
Like as you're walking out, just grab the chair and just give him a little smack with it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm, you know, I'll stop complaining about that stuff from here on out, unless it really stands out again. But Christian slowly gets to his feet, and then Abyss tries to do a power bomb through the table. Christian is flips out, but then is set stomach first in the corner. And I should say this is a table that was set up in the ring, not the two tables that are on the outside.
Yeah, that was another thing that bugged me, like which the two tables end up coming into play later on,
Right.
which is something that I always enjoy. I always enjoy when like something is set up and it doesn't go off right then, and
Right.
so you're allowed, and then the other stuff happens, so you're allowed to kind of forget about it.
Yeah.
But
Check. Yeah.
when it comes into play, you're like, oh, I forgot that was there, that's awesome. But
Yeah.
there was no like there was nothing to be done with those two tables. He just set them up.
Right. Exactly. I agree with what you're saying. I totally agree. Yeah, I Chekhov's double tables. You you want the I love it when they bring it in, but you need to have a reason to set up those tables right then. You need to be kind of part of the strategy of the match, and there absolutely wasn't. Yeah, the third bringing the third table in and put it in. Okay, that makes sense. I'll give you that one. Bring in the table and then into the ring and then power bombing him through. That makes sense as far as the strategy goes. It's just the first two. It's just like, okay, that's pretty mindless.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, Christian flips out of the power bomb, but then it sends the McPherson in the corner. And then again, Abyss is kind of slow to follow. He sets up a charge with Christian's set up with the angled ladder in the back. He runs toward it, but predictably misses. And then Christian sets Abyss on top of the ladder on the canvas, and then comes down with the frog splash off the top and misses the frog splash. That was another big bump that he took.
Yeah, that was brutal. That looked really
right. And although this time Christian's sort of like fine 30 seconds later, which was a little bit annoying. But outside, Abyss gets the chain. He swings it at Christian, who ducks. Christian grabs the chain and then chokes him, and that is standing on the apron and holding the chain around Abyss's neck, which also plays into the hanging, which was pretty cool. I liked that. And then another thing that was cool is that Abyss ends up overpowering him, pulls him down off. He's standing on the top rope, and then Christian ends up flipping over and falling through the tables.
Yeah, he stands on the apron initially, and then gets on the top rope, the top turnbuckle for more leverage.
Right.
And then Abyss uses the chain to kind of like flip him over. And that's when those two tables that were set up for no reason comes into play. But again, like, there's no way Abyss could have known, like, hey, you know what? If he ever starts choking me with a chain and stands up on the top rope, I can totally use these two tables to, you know, send him crashing through.
Yeah.
I mean, they come into play, but again, like, the fact that they're set up in the first place didn't make any sense.
Well, how hard would it have been to have them as part of the set, you know, as part of, like, just have weapons and tables around, you know, the area that you can go and grab and, you know, be part of it? I mean,
like, already set up, you know?
Right, exactly. Abyss sets up a ladder. He finds up the ladder under the belt and climbs. Christian comes in, nails him with a steel chair. They both go onto the top rope and go after the belt and punch it a few times. Then they end up toppling the ladder. They both go down into the ropes. Christian is crotched and sort of has an awkward landing with his knee on the ring ropes. I couldn't really tell how Abyss landed, but I assume not that great because it's hard to land pretty well doing that sort of thing.
I think he might have landed like, you know, throat first on the top rope, but I think he landed pretty pretty cleanly.
Right, yeah. I mean, obviously he did fine in the landing, but any landing like that's obviously going to be tricky to do for, you know, even for a trained professional.
Yeah.
Mitchell then brings in the tacks, and Abyss helps spread them out onto the floor, which gives Christian time to pop up, and he hits Abyss with the Unprettier with his face going into the ladder. And then he grabs Mitchell and hits him with the rock bottom onto the tacks. We get a big TNA chant there. And then,
which I probably was a part of, I'll admit.
Okay, well, I'm not going to judge you. That's the type of thing I would do, but you know, but you were younger then, and you're in the enthusiasm moment. You're in the impact zone. I mean, why not, you know, indulge in a TNA chant, you know? You were letting...
When in Rome.
Yeah. Go ahead.
When in Rome.
Yes. Chant TNA.
But I, watching the match, I thought it was a weird shot. Like, Mitchell's wearing, like, you know, the black button-down and the red slacks.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't notice that he was holding the bag of tacks at first because he was holding it kind of against the ring apron, which is also black. And so I didn't notice it at first. So I just thought it was like a weird shot. Like the cameraman just like really liked his red pants. It's like, oh, like looking sharp there, Sinister Minister. And then now they go back. I'm like, oh, I can see the black bag of tacks now. Okay, that makes sense. It's just not a, you know, a shot of the pants.
Yeah. Yeah. And At this point, Christian grabs a chair, slams it into the back of Abyss's head, then he sets him up on the table, and then he heads to the top of the ladder, and he teases going after the belt, but he decides, no, I'm not going to grab this belt right now. I am instead going to jump off this ladder and frog splash you through the table instead.
Yeah, which, again, that's weird. Like, if he wasn't going to do that in the first place, why would he set him up on the table?
Right. Or maybe grab the belt and win the match.
Yeah.
And then
just
I
want
to punish him afterward, which I can do after the match. I will jump afterward and the people will get excited about that and I will get my revenge. But I will also ensure that I keep my title.
Yeah, exactly. Just like make sure the title's won. You know, then you can frog splash the guy. Considering how many times like you've missed a move and he's missed a move, like it's like, you know, running into ladders and all that, like it's
sure
like you're tempting fate at this point.
Yeah, but he climbs up again. Abyss very slowly tries to get to the bottom of the ladder and tries to climb a little bit, but he is too weak. And Christian goes up and grabs the title and wins it easily. And that is the end, and we celebrate, and that is what we have done. So. I thought they did a nice job of setting up, you know, the last couple of minutes of the match, of setting up moments in which Christian was kind of, getting revenge for the specific things that had been done for him. But it just kind of felt a little clunky. It felt rushed. It felt, you know, kind of senseless almost to a certain extent, you know?
Yeah, this is very much a spot fest. Like it just,
yeah,
you know, you set up, you know, one big move and then you just move on to the other without anything kind of like, you know, linking them together.
Yeah. Or any purpose to it. You know, I mean, and yeah, there's just not really, I mean, there's aspects of the story, but there's so much going on that it just doesn't, fit, that it just really, I mean, it's okay. It's not, it's, you know, enjoyable enough to watch, I guess, or the spots are entertaining and, you know, it's not, there's nothing in it that I found absolutely terrible. Some of Abyss's punches I thought were pretty bad, but and a little bit of his selling. But you know, other than that, it wasn't like I had a huge problem with it, but it was just sort of a little bit of disappointment.
Yeah, for me the best part of the match, I mean, it's the ending. Like once once they get outside and the chain comes into play, that's kind of for me like when the match actually has a real flow to it.
Right.
I mean, granted it's only like it's the last 5 minutes or so, but you know, that kind of everything from that point like leads up to everything else, which I enjoyed up until then. It was kind of, you know, spot, you know, rest, spot, rest.
Yeah. So obviously you attended this show. Do you have any memories of the rest of the show or of that trip in general?
I tweeted, I'm going to Slammiversary on Sunday because it's held, I live in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and it's being held in Arlington. Mm-hmm. And so, me and a couple of my friends are going and, I was like, I don't really know how I should feel. Like, I don't know if I should be excited. And I was like, well, at least I'll get to see Sting wrestle for, you know, at least once.
Yeah.
But I did see him wrestle. He was in a tag match at Sacrifice with Samoa Joe against Jeff Jarrett and Scott Steiner that I completely forgot about. It was the co-main event, and I completely forgot about it. Beyond that, what I really remember Sacrifice for is Jushin Liger. I got to see Jushin Liger wrestle, which was awesome. So
Petey Williams.
For sure. But I'd seen Petey Williams a couple times.
Well, I just meant he wrestled Petey Williams.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Not that Petey Williams is an exciting guy to see wrestle, but yes. But
he's pretty good.
Yeah, he's fine. I saw him live once, actually, at an ROH show in Dayton. He was just randomly there for some reason. So, and then you had America's Most Wanted against Styles and Daniels. That's that probably was a pretty good match.
Yeah. Overall, it was a pretty enjoyable pay-per-view. We were staying in a hotel that provided a shuttle to Universal Studios,
mm-hmm.
but because the show ended so late, I mean, not like so late, you know, the show ends at what, 10 o'clock. the last shuttle coming back was at 8 or 9. And so instead of, you know, pitching, you know, instead of, you know, going ahead to getting a cab on the, for the way back, we decided to walk back to the hotel since it was only a couple miles, but we ended up getting lost.
Oh.
And so we started like wandering around like the streets of Orlando late at night, trying to find our hotel. I even called them at one point and asked them like, "Hey, I'm standing at this intersection. How would I be able to walk back to the location? I'm not in a car, so I can't get on the highway." But we ended up making it back, and my friend was really upset with me because I was the one navigating. And so the next, which we stayed for the next day's set of impact tapings. And so the next night he's like, "You know what? I'm going to take over the walk back. You screwed it up, and I want it to happen again." We end up getting more lost and taking the exact same route that we did, except it took a lot longer to get there. So, yeah, and also just kind of hanging out with the Impact Zone regulars, you know, before the shows. That was something. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know how to describe what that was.
Probably some characters in there.
Yeah, that was around the time that See No Evil had come out, the horror movie with Kane.
Right.
And this guy was, I struck up a conversation with. He told me, he's like, "Yeah, I heard that on the set of the movie that Kane was they had to stop Kane from like choking out some of the other actors." and I wanted to tell him like, "Really? Because last time I checked, that's a movie, and that stuff is faker than wrestling."
That's hilarious.
I got to enjoy Universal Studios, and Jimmy Hart was out there, like shelling the show. And anyone, like, people would come up, and they're like, "Oh, there's wrestling?" Like, and this is back in 06, back before Hogan was in TNA. And they're like, "Oh, is Hulk Hogan going to be there?" He's like, "Yeah, man, Hulk Hogan's going to be there." Like, "What about Goldberg?" "Yeah, Goldberg's going to be there." he was the hard sell. As long as he got them in there, it didn't matter what he said.
That's hilarious.
But, fun trip. I'm glad I went. At that time, I wasn't sure if I would ever get to see TNA live. That was before they were venturing out outside of Orlando. So I'm glad I went. But since then, I've seen them just once. They came to Dallas, and I saw a little house show. And then, of course, I'll be seeing them on Sunday.
Sure. Well, hopefully they will provide you with a great entertainment on Sunday.
We can hope. I hope so. I mean, we will be seeing Abyss, or rather Joseph Park, taking on Bully Ray, who has also come into his own recently.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that should be a good, as our friend Tom Holzerman likes to say, that should be a good Hoss fight.
Yeah, that'll be interesting just to see how they develop that character and how they handle all that. I mean, that's one of the more compelling stories going on, you know, right now. It really is. It's just great work. And you got to love when you can completely a guy who's been stale for a long time can just completely reinvent himself and be awesome at it. You know, I'm thinking like R-Truth, for instance, you know, and obviously this is a little different because it's a completely new character, but still it's really just, it's wonderful to see.
No, yeah, for sure.
Cause a lot of character reinventions don't work particularly well, but this is wonderful from a guy who, like, you know, neither of us has really ever been super impressed with.
No, yeah, and as Joseph Park, he's been a revelation. It's just, yeah, he's literally created an entirely new character. It's awesome, and it's a great character too. His mannerisms, his facial expressions are great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's really. I guess, you know, that he's been under that mask for so long, I guess you just had to, get it all out.
You had to set him free.
Yeah. So what do you think overall of Christian's time in TNA? Because it just kind of – like it seemed to sort of start off with some promise, and then I don't know. I always sort of felt like his title reign was pretty good, but it wasn't like anything – maybe he just didn't quite have like the best range of opponents either, you know. He just sort of he had okay opponents, but he had Monty Brown, which, you know, Monty Brown was okay, but not like anything particularly that special. And he, the Abyss feud had its moments, but It wasn't like he was, he wasn't really wrestling AJ Styles that much or Samoa Joe. You know, they were still kind of keeping them separate in the X division. Maybe guys he could have really had some classics with, and I guess kind of did later after he was champion. It just doesn't seem like that mix worked quite as well as you might think it would have.
Yeah, I think they might. I mean, this is just my theory. I haven't read or heard anything that would confirm this, but it kind of seems that he came to TNA and became almost instantly became the champion, and when that didn't get them the success that they thought that getting like a moderately big WWE star into their promotion. They kind of lost confidence in him, and so after that initial like title run, he just kind of went through the motions in the TNA roster. I don't know, like as far like personally, he lives. I think he lives in Tampa, I think, or I mean, maybe even Orlando. He lives down in the area, so as far as like personally, I'm sure he saw it as a pretty sweet gig. He gets to wrestle like a few times a month, close to home and hang out with his foxy wife and in their great house. And now he's back in WWE, which and he's been great so far. He's been great since he came back from his injury.
I mean, and he's had an awesome run in WWE. I had that fun, pretty fun feud with Orton. A lot of people were not fans of him losing the title right away, but it turned into a pretty good heel run for him. And and I'm not saying that like he was bad in TNA by any stretch. He had a lot of good things that happened, but it just wasn't like it wasn't as big as it felt like it should have been. And they kind of like moved away from him pretty quickly. And like we talked about, moved toward guys like Sting. And another big thing was Kurt Angle coming to TNA as well, which was what was that late in 2006?
Yeah, that was later 2006.
Yeah, that was toward the end of 2006. So, and
About a year after Christian shows up, Kurt Angle shows up.
right, and obviously was a really big star in WWE, and so was going to get the attention on him. And Christian was more, it's kind of a mid-level to, and occasionally would do main event stuff after that.
Yeah, exactly. It was at the end of No Surrender, which was in September. They aired a little like a video promo,
That's right.
which kind of teased that it was Goldberg, because you only see kind of the silhouette, like someone like in a ring, like kind of stretching and doing their thing. And they kind of teased that it was Goldberg, because that was a big rumor going around as well that Goldberg was gonna sign with TNA relatively soon, and they like former world champion, and I think he might have even done something like Goldberg, like a Goldberg-esque mannerism Kurt Angle did during that video, which kind of led you to believe even more so that it would be Goldberg. But then they brought up like Olympic gold medalist, and then you're like, oh, it's Kurt Angle for sure, which I marked out huge for that. Because like I said, I was a huge fan of TNA, and like Kurt Angle, for all his faults, can still bring it in the ring. And so I was, just the idea of like Kurt Angle versus Samoa Joe, Kurt Angle versus AJ Styles, Kurt Angle versus any number of the guys on the roster, that was pretty exciting for me.
We'll see.
Well, thanks so much for having me on again, man. I appreciate it.
Sure.
It's always fun talking with my good friend Jason Mann.
Well, thank you, sir. I enjoy talking to you as well. Anything that you want to mention to listeners as far as any plugs you want? You were a man of many Twitters, but have narrowed down your Twitter, so you probably should tell everyone who they should follow and so on and so forth.
Yeah, I split up. I had three Twitter accounts, one for like just a personal one for MMA and one for wrestling. But then I've started just mainly because whenever there is an MMA event on or a wrestling show on, I didn't want to bog down my timeline like live tweeting that stuff,
Sure.
and sending all that stuff to a bunch of people who necessarily wouldn't want to read it. But now I live tweet the fights for MMA Mania, their official Twitter, and I usually live tweet any show on Cage Side Seats official Twitter at it's at MMA Mania, and also at Cage Side Seats. And so that's kind of that's kind of negated the need for multiple Twitter accounts. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can at it's at SergioTX, and it's a little bit of everything. And you can also read my stuff, as aforementioned, on MMA Mania and Cage Side Seats.
Cool. Well, thanks again for being part of the show. I know we have plans to have you on again. I'm looking forward to that.
And that should be fun. Should be fun.
Definitely. And everyone, of course, thanks for listening. And you can check us out at WrestleSpective.com. We have lots of links related to every podcast, lots of photos and video and all cool stuff that will even give you added context for the things that we talk about. So check it out, WrestleSpective.com. There's a link to every episode is there. You can also find us at iTunes as well. A great, it would be wonderful if you could give us a rating and a short review on iTunes. A good way to help spread the word of the podcast. And so keep listening for more reviews of wrestling main events here at WrestleSpective. And thanks for listening, and we'll be back to talk to you later.